So today we have Jason Hansen on the show. So Jason, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Hey Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Jason, can you give us a brief overview of your business and the huge ranch that you have that you do all the training in?
Sure. So yeah, after I left the agency, I started a company called Spy Escape and Evasion. And we do evasive driving training. We do escape and evasion training. We do pistol, rifle. We train bodyguards, like how to be your own bodyguard or bodyguards for celebrities. And we have 320 acres out in Utah where we get to do all this crazy training and have a lot of fun and shoot guns and crash cars. So it's a blast. I can't complain.
That sounds fun. You have your background is not only in the CIA, but also you have a law enforcement background.
Yeah, my very first job out of college was as a police officer. And very shortly after that, the CIA and the Secret Service offered me a job. And I figured the agency was going to be a little more exciting. So I was with the agency from 2003 to 2010. And then I left in 2010 to start my own company.
The idea for your company was pretty much teaching the average American the things that you learned?
Yeah, I mean, the idea was to teach average American spy skills, because spies, you know, it's not like you're in the military. When you're a spy, you're out on the streets, you're by yourself, you don't have any cavalry, so you basically are an average person walking around. And so I'm teaching people these spy skills, which they can use every day.
So Jason, real quick, you know, some of the stuff that we're talking about here is kind of cool, and I get the idea, and I love the idea of using firearms and whatnot. But so, let's say you live in a state that, you know, carrying a firearm isn't so readily available. Say like California, for instance. And you know, there's a lot of protests going on nowadays. People are not happy with the president. They're not happy with life in general. You got Antifa out there doing pop-up protests. And so, say you and your wife and family or whatever are going out to something that you get caught up in that. Well, what are your recommendations? And I know there's like the idea of being the gray man or even civilian, but what are your recommendations of somebody that can kind of go through that aspect of it where you have some crazy protest type stuff and you get caught up in that? Can you talk about that for a second?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you live in a state like California or Massachusetts or New Jersey, where you're not going to have a gun, most likely, you know, other weapons are obviously a tactical pen. Anybody can carry a tactical pen. You know, a small blade, as long as it meets that state's laws, and then a tactical flashlight. So flashlights are some of my favorite weapons you can carry everywhere because you can blind an attacker while you escape to safety. But if an attacker keeps coming, you can beat the living daylights out of them. So a flashlight to the face or the head does not feel good when it's a quality metal flashlight. But if I'm going out, my wife and I are in one of those situations, you know, there's the gray man and there's the chameleon. The gray man is blending in. The chameleon is going to your enemy to pass through them, meaning if there's a riot and somebody's, you know, screaming down with whoever, you know, whatever politician, if I have to move through that crowd and I've got to scream with down with whatever the politician's name is, just to act like I'm with them until I can get through them and out of them, by all means, I'm going to do it. You know, obviously the most important thing is using your head and staying out of those situations in the first place. So if you know there's a riot, stay away from where the riot's going to be. If you know there's going to be a huge gathering this Saturday, don't go to that restaurant, which is near the huge gathering. So clearly I'm going to avoid it as much as I can.
Yeah, that's important. I believe in the flashlight technique as a martial artist and a retired law enforcement. I've had a flashlight with me my whole adult life. And these new tactical flashlights are very good for a defensive weapon. Matter of fact, I've even taken mine on airplanes.
So, Jason, so one of the things that you recommended that I agree is having a really good situational awareness of what you're doing, where you're going to, not just blindly go to that cool concert that's going to be at the Hollywood Bowl, but understand what the climate is for that day, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's so easy. I mean, we all know, all of you know and I know, that everybody's going to have their head down staring at their cell phone. So if you're the one guy in the crowd with your head up, spot the danger ahead of time. I mean, years ago, two men tried to kidnap me, and I spotted them coming at me from 25 yards away, and I was able to run away. They tried to chase me, but I was able to outrun them. So had I had my head buried in some phone, I would have never seen these two guys coming, and who knows what would have happened. So years ago, all of us, of course, walked around with our heads up before cell phones. It's not hard to do, but nobody does it anymore.
Yeah, nobody seems to talk anymore either. I've seen people at the same table text each other.
Yeah, I've never sent a text message in my life. I use an old flip phone. You know, if somebody wants to get a hold of me, they know they need to call me. And I'm obviously more old school in that way. But, yeah, I don't want to have my head down taking 10 minutes to text back and forth when I can just ask somebody a question or just call them real quick. Plus, it keeps my hands free so I'm not crossing the road texting if somebody tries to attack me or something's going to happen.
You also have intelligence operations and cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is huge. It's almost daily in the news. But let's back up to intelligence operations. Can you clarify that a little bit more? I think you've touched on some of it already, but can you delve a little bit deeper into it?
Well, I mean, intelligence operations is a huge gamut, so it depends on what you mind. I mean, my company, we do all types of things these days. That means companies will hire us if they want to check out employees or if they want to check out a business partner where we can go use our human intelligence stuff. I mean, my whole company is based, obviously, on the intelligence model. So we're able to gather research, we're able to find out things that the average person can't or won't invest the time to find out. And so the world is very, very lazy these days. But if you're a billionaire doing some billion-dollar deal, you're going to hire us to make sure that it's legit and we have the ways to go find out everything that's going on and find out all the bodies. So the average person clearly doesn't need to do that, but it's still very valuable and is even more valuable because, again, most people are lazy these days.
Yes. So on the cybersecurity front, there's stuff in the news daily. I think that's probably why you carry a flip phone instead of one of the smartphones. What does your company offer as far as cybersecurity and training for the average person? Considering that this is a civil defense radio show and our audience is concerned about our safety as a nation and being prepared, what does the cybersecurity aspect look like for that?
Well, for the average person, a lot of it is easy to do and implement. You don't have to go out there and spend a fortune. So, we work with big companies where we can go in and do everything, but for the average Joe just sitting at home behind his laptop or his desktop, all you need to do are a few simple things. First, you got to be prepared to be hacked. What I mean is, it's going to happen. Whether your information got stolen at Target when they took the $50 million or Equifax or, whatever the next breach is, hacking is never going to go away. So what I tell people is, one, make sure your credit is frozen. You got to put a credit freeze on all three bureaus. And I've probably had my credit freeze for 20 years now. That way, when your information is stolen, they can't use your social security number to go take out a mortgage or go buy a car or go take out some massive loan. So freezing your credit should be the number one thing that everybody does as soon as they start or as soon as they finish listening to this. And then two, when you're surfing the internet, use a simple thing like a VPN, a virtual private network. So if you're on an airplane or you're in a hotel and you're on their Wi-Fi, well, if you're surfing normally without a virtual private network, then everybody can read your mail. You can get hacked in a heartbeat. But if you're using a VPN, which are very expensive, they're maybe $50 to $100 a year, then it encrypts your information, and you're not going to get hacked on Starbucks Wi-Fi or whatever open Wi-Fi. So those are some very simple things. And, of course, it's common sense when your Nigerian cousin wants you to give him your bank account so he can give you $50 million. Don't respond to all those phishing emails.
Yeah, common sense.
Exactly.
Sometimes that common sense isn't so common, okay? Sometimes we have to do a little bit more to that for some people. So see, that's one thing that we need to teach our children, too. So, my son's 16, and I always tell him not to be logging into the Starbucks Wi-Fi when he goes there with his friend on his smartphone as well. So something that you need to start teaching the kids as well. Hey, real quick, just going back to what you were saying about the airplane and about carrying a flashlight, you're about to tell a story about that. Talk a little bit more about traveling and your personal surroundings. landings and stuff like that, and what you do.
So, yeah, if I'm flying on a plane, I will always have my tactical pen with me. I will always have my tactical flashlight. So I have those. But what most people don't realize is you can take a ton on an airplane. I'll give you an example. So I fly all over the country, and I'm teaching escape and evasion classes. And on my carry-on bag, so again, I'm not checking this. I'm carrying this on an airplane. I have duct tape, rope, zip ties, pliers, handcuffs, handcuff keys, lockpick sets. And all of that is perfectly legal to fly with on an airplane because I do it all the time. So if I can get all that stuff on there, remember, criminals can get stuff on there too. And it's all about, same thing, keeping your head up, not dozing off the entire plane ride. When you get on the plane and you're walking to your seat, just scan the surroundings. It takes about 10 seconds. You see anything suspicious, anybody you may want to keep an eye on. And then, again, just having your head up and knowing that if something happens, obviously you have to be aggressive and rush the attacker. You can't sit there. So you got to rush them, whether it's with your tactical pen, whether it's with your flashlight, whether it's empty-handed. So you've got to be the aggressor because we know that 99% of people won't. They're going to freeze in their seats. You've got to make sure you're the person that doesn't freeze.
Speaking of freezing, do you subscribe to Boyd's Little Loop?
I do, yes. Yep. And what I tell people when it comes to freezing is it all comes down to training. So every morning, I dry fire with my handgun. Every morning, the first thing I do, and I get up at 4:30 a.m. to get to work, so I come down to my home office, I take my gun out of the safe, and I do 25 dry fire trigger pulls. Takes maybe 10 minutes, but because I train every morning with my gun, in the instances, and there's only been two, where I've had to pull out my gun, it's almost automatic. I know what to do. I don't hesitate because I train. So, you know, you do martial arts and stuff. It's all training. It embeds in your mind. And, you know, what I always tell most people is you don't have to spend a gazillion hours a week. Spend a few minutes a day, you know, maybe hour or so a week if that's all you have. And you're going to develop that muscle memory. And that is the key to not freezing and to staying alive.
Yeah, that's important is muscle memory. And it's big in athletics as well, so it's not a new concept. It works. And visualizing your actions, your reactions to different stimuli, different threats, is also important.
Yeah, I mean, as you just said, it's not a new concept. There's nothing new. I mean, human beings haven't changed since the beginning of the time. Predators are going to show predatory behavior. They're going to go after their weak, just like animals in the wild do. So when you're out and about walking, are you walking with your head up? Are you walking with confidence? Or are you stooped over? Is your head down and you look like an easy victim? So there are many things which, again, are never going to change. And common sense, as you know, said earlier, is not very common, but common sense is, should I walk in this dark parking lot by myself if I see three scary characters by my car? Probably not. I should go back inside and wait for other people to lock me in my car or not even go to my car and get it later kind of thing. So, yeah, criminal behavior is never going to change. We just got to make sure we're smart about it.
Jason, what's the biggest threat that you plan for?
The biggest threat that I plan for, now, of course, there's huge global threats such as economic collapse or blackout when the power grid goes down, stuff like that, which I certainly believe could happen, but, of course, we just have no idea when it's going to happen. So the biggest threat I prepare for is the random attack, meaning the crackhead who's walking through the Walmart parking lot looking to attack somebody, or the guy who's driving the neighborhood because he wants to do a home invasion. So it's kind of the random attack is what I prepare for because that's most realistic, and that's unfortunately which numerous people face every single day in our country. I mean, there's the FBI stat where there's every 15 seconds – a home invasion occurs. Now, we have millions of homes in this country, so it's still small, but to those people who have their home invasion in that 15 seconds, that's everything. So I prepare for the random crime that occurs every day in this country and one day could happen to me.
How do you prepare your home?
Well, I use common sense. I've got an alarm sign in my front yard. I have an alarm system in my house. I have solar motion sensor lights. So I have motion sensor lights, but they're solar. In case electricity goes out, they'll still work. I've got cameras on my house. I make sure that I have, you know, real locks, meaning I'm not using some cheap brand like Kwikset. And then if they make it through all that and get into my house, I've got guns on my nightstand. I've got flashlights. I can quickly, you know, grab a gun somewhere in my house and respond to that threat if my front door ever were to get kicked in.
Now, you're right about the fact that you think that guns should be, you know, placed strategically around your house. But then you also say, if you have kids, you know, it's going to be a little harder. Don't do it. What do you recommend to somebody who has young kids in the house? You know, you don't want to necessarily have a firearm just laying around.
So I've got four young kids, ages six and under. And I still have guns all throughout my house. They're just in rapid access safes. So if you have young kids, obviously every single gun needs to be locked up. But these days you can get safes where you just push a button and you can open these safes in 3 seconds or less. So on every floor of my house is one of these rapid access safes with a handgun. That way I'm never far for a gun if I need one. Like right now I'm sitting here in my home office. I've got one of these safes. I push four buttons, it pops open. I can get to my gun. And even if you don't have kids, I still think guns should be locked up because you never know. You may have a plumber or electrician or someone visiting, and I always want to make sure that nobody can get to my guns but me or my wife.
Yeah, that's smart and safe. It goes without saying, yeah. You have written at least one book, correct?
That is correct. I've written several books.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your bestsellers?
Sure. So, yeah, my first book was a New York Times bestseller, and it's called Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You can get it on Amazon or any major bookstore, and that teaches a bunch of the spy skills, like escaping duct tape or picking locks or avoiding a carjacking. And then another book called Survive Like a Spy, and that tells some very cool CIA operations and how those CIA operations can apply to us, meaning here's how the operative did this, and here's how we can do this too. So here's how we can make sure we're not being followed. Here's how we can make sure to harden our home even better. You can get Survive Like a Spy on Amazon also, or any bookstore. And then I've got a new book coming out in May is when the release date is. So I enjoy writing, and there's always spy skills to be taught, so hopefully I'll be doing that for a while.
What are the three skills that you think an average person should learn?
That is a great question. The three skills the average person should learn. One is situational awareness, which is an easy one, keeping your head up and making sure you're not just a drone, you're not a zombie like most of these people walking around these days. I'd say the second skill is some very basic self-defense moves, because most people are not going to take the time to train. But there are very simple self-defense moves anybody can do. And then I already know, when you're in a tough situation, you're not going to remember 97 different ninja moves. You're going to remember, you know, simple strikes. So I think everybody should learn basic self-defense stuff. And then third, what is third? Because there's like a million and one. But I'd say the home stuff, just because we spend so much time in our home, because home invasions are only increasing, is learn how to protect your home. Learn how to harden it by popping up some cameras and popping up some motion sensor lights. And even if you don't like guns, because I realize not everybody does, but have a home defense plan. So if you hear your front door getting kicked in at 3 a.m., I know I'm going to grab my gun and flashlight. If you're not going to do that, what are you going to grab? You know, is it going to be the baseball bat, the golf club? But have some tool near your bedside to protect yourself.
What do you think about dogs? I always tell people that if they're going to be any kind of dog, really works because they're good alert systems. But what do you think about dogs?
I think dogs are one of the best things to get. I think, you know, obviously German Shepherd's a great breed, but as you said, even if it's a yappy dog to scare away, because criminals don't want to be alerted to the fact that they're there. Plus, they don't want to be bit by a dog and leave behind DNA evidence. So I think a dog is a wonderful thing to get for home defense purposes.
I tell you, my Silky Terrier, he's more ferocious than my big lab. So,
it never works. Yeah, as long as it scares them away, that's all that matters.
So, do you also believe in the safe room concept?
Well, I believe in the safe room concept, but probably not in the way most people think about it. So, Hollywood has made the room, or the term safe room, very sexy. You've got to have this $100,000 room that only billionaires can afford. But the way I do a safe room is simply a room in the house, and it's usually or should be the member who is the weakest member of your family. I have a one-year-old daughter, so she's the weakest member of her family, meaning she can't get out of her crib. She's not going to run. Her room is our safe room. If you've got your 95-year-old mother or your grandmother living with you, that would be the safe room because she's probably not going to move as fast. So go to wherever the slowest slash weakest member is, lock the door, hunt her down behind some wooden furniture, and if somebody is foolish enough to try and take that door in, they should obviously be met by your gun. So that's my version of a safe room.
So would you also have some type of extra security lock on that door as well, some different hinges and things just to make it a little harder to get into?
Yeah, absolutely I would. I would make sure that it's got a real lock, a Schlage or a Medico, not the cheap locks that come on standard doors and houses. And I'd make sure, again, wooden furniture was there that you could strategically get behind if need be. And then if you have kids, have a little safe there with some extra stuff, maybe some extra ammo, maybe a spare gun for somebody in your house who can shoot too besides you, such as your wife, or maybe a son who's old enough or a daughter who's old enough to handle a gun. I would have those few extra things in my safe room.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent on teaching kids about guns as soon as they're mature enough to handle it. My son knew the difference between my gun and his guns, and he never touched mine. And when he was about 6 years old, I took him out to the range for the first time. He loved it, but he still knew, and he had that respect early on.
Exactly, yeah. As I mentioned, all my kids are young. My oldest is 6, so I'm teaching them what's age appropriate. They know not to touch my guns. As you said, they know to respect guns. And they always ask me, when do I get to start shooting? When do I get to have my own gun? We take them out and we shoot BB guns and we shoot 22s. I look forward to the day when they're old enough and mature enough that I can, I can start training them on my Glock or my Smith & Wesson.
That was going to be my question I was going to ask you, for segue. What do you think of using, the AR-22 or even, the 22 kits that look like a 9mm or 45 that same shape that gets them used to the muscle memory of using the larger fire calibers?
I think the 22s are great for training because for kids, you don't want them to get scared by the recoil. You don't want to get them scared by the loud thing that's going to go off by your head. So, I think that probably the most foolish thing would be popping a 45 in their hand and trying to train them on that. You want them to learn the fundamentals, learn how to hold the gun. You want them to enjoy and love it. And since the 22 is so tame and mild, that's the way they introduce them to guns, because they'll find it's fun, let them shoot some cans. Start small and then move up to the bigger calibers.
One of the things that I do, I have some indoor ranges here where I live, and can't shoot some of the center fire, a larger caliber, like even an AR-20, even an AR, you can't shoot them in the indoor range, unless you have it's an open range. There's some rules that go along with it. So what I did, though, is I went out, I bought the AR-22 Smith & Wesson, and it has the same muscle memory as a regular AR, same idea of pushing the button and being able to put the magazine in, and same concept, except it's a smaller, cheaper round to shoot. So that's one of the things that I do with my son when we go to the indoor range. That is, that's why I think it's kind of a good tool to use for training.
The ARs and 22 caliber are awesome because, again, the kick isn't bad. It's a heck of a lot cheaper, and you can blow through a ton of rounds, have a lot of fun, and you're still learning all the ergonomics and everything of shooting an AR.
I was going to say, I like the pistol caliber AR, like a 9mm AR pistol. My wife, I took her out when we were dating, and we're fairly newlywed, 6 years now. So when I took her out to the range the first time, we had an AR, a 9mm AR with a red dot, and at 15 yards, she put her first three rounds in the target, and you could cover it with a quarter. And so she's not very large. She's a small woman and not real strong upper body strength. So she did very well with that little gun.
Well, the best part is when she shoots that well, she loves the, you know, she enjoys guns. So if people are going to miss, if they can't hit anything, they don't want to keep doing it. Like when they can easily hit the target and they realize it's fun, they'll want to continue training.
Jason, real quick, explain to our audience the difference between static shooting such as an indoor range and dynamic shooting such as an outdoor range or something that you teach at your school.
Well, most ranges, indoor ranges for obvious safety purposes, you go in there, you've got your little square box you're in, you've got your, you know, your sides up, you load your gun and you sit there and you shoot and you're not moving, you're not running, you're really not doing anything because of the safety issue. But our range is a 360-degree shooting range, so we can run and shoot. We can create scenarios where you've got to run your gun, pick it up, and take out your threat. Or we can do scenarios where you've got to back up shooting while you're moving backwards because the threat is coming at you. So it allows us to create a lot more lifelike scenarios.
So you've seen a lot of these videos that are out now. They're funny, and you know, those of us that are into shooting, we get to laugh at them a little bit. There's people doing some crazy silliness on the range, just like chasing the robot down and shooting at it. What kind of training do you recommend to somebody? I mean, obviously, don't look at YouTube and try to do this. Where can they go and get good ideas of doing for good practical training, even if they're not going to a course like yours, where they can go out to the desert and set some stuff up? And where can they get real information, not the YouTube stuff?
Well, I mean, lucky for us, you know, in the country we live in now, in almost every city, in almost area, you can find quality trainers. So I go to your local gun store, and I'd say, who do you guys trust? Who puts on a two-day pistol course that's worthwhile? So, you know, I have people fly from all over the country, fly from all over the world to see me, but you can probably drive 30 minutes from your house and still find a good trainer who can give you what you need. So that's what I tell most people to do.
That's good. That's actually really good advice right there. Yeah, I always see these things, and I always shake my head going, oh, why do people do this? It's not good training, and number two, it's dangerous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're obviously there are some good YouTube channels, but there's also some horrific ones, so clearly be careful of what you watch on YouTube, and instead go get real live training in person.
So, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they find you?
So, if they just go to spyescape.com, that's the website, and they can, you know, find me there, or they can just shoot an email to info@spyescape.com, and that'll just go to my customer service team that eventually funnels its way through me. So yeah, if there's anything needs, if anybody has questions or needs training, just reach out to me and I'll be happy to help any way I can.
If you could say one thing to everybody who's out there wanting to get ready for whatever event's coming their way, what would it be?
Prepare ahead of time. That way, when the event does happen, you're not freaking out. So I've got food storage in my house. I've got water storage. Clearly have plenty of guns and ammo. So I hope we don't have an event. I don't think anybody does hope we have some crazy economic collapse. But when it happens, I'll be inconvenienced, but I'm not going to be afraid that I'm going to die or anything like most people.
All right, one more question here. So back a few years ago, they had that TV show that I think was kind of silly, but it was the Doomsday Prepper. What can we tell the people who don't want to be considered the Doomsday Prepper, the average person who's just like, I just want to live my life. I don't think anything's going to happen. I don't want to, you know, have a bunker, you know, up in the mountains. What can they do to just take that step forward to be ready for any disaster?
I mean, the majority of my customers are the average people. They're not crazy preppers. They're not wearing gas masks. A lot of my customers are very high net worth individuals, CEOs and celebrities and stuff. And they do just what I said. They have self-prepped, meaning they've got food storage in case they can't get food. They've got water storage in case a pipe bursts and they can't access their water. They have guns, they have ammo, so they have supplies at hand, and then, of course, they take training. So hopefully you're never going to use a lot of these supplies, but they're there for a rainy day, and, I mean, that's the easiest thing to do. Just prepare a little bit, you know, every single month, every single year, then we are always ready.